Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet. I'm Ruben Stern. Earlier this month, Boone County voters approved a 1/4-cent sales tax to fund programs that support the mental health and well-being of young people in our community. It's estimated that tax could generate $5.4 million each year. The initiative reflects a larger push to support the needs of younger people in our community. Beginning next year, the Heart of Missouri United Way begins a new funding model that shifts away from general social services and instead focuses specifically on youth and poverty. So what's going on here? What's driving the increased attention on the needs of young people? What exactly are the needs of young people that are not being met? And what do those who work with youth in our community expect the increased funding to accomplish? Joining me in the studio to talk about these issues, first, Christine Corcoran is the director of the Putting Kids First Coalition. That group was responsible for getting Proposition 1 on the ballot. She also is the director of regional operations for Lutheran Family and Children's Services of Missouri. Welcome to our program, Christine Corcoran.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us
today.
Also with us today, Candy Iveson is the board president of Heart of Missouri Court-Appointed Special Advocates. The group works to support children going through the court system in Boone and Callaway counties. Welcome to our program, Candy Iveson.
Thank you.
Glad to have you with us today as well. Also with us in the studio, Tim Rich is the executive director of the Heart of Missouri United Way. Welcome, Tim Rich.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Glad to have you with us at the table, too. We have one more guest who's joining us by phone today. Bruce Sawatsky is the executive director of the Community and Children's Resource Board of St. Charles County. The board administers a youth-oriented service fund that was approved by voters in 2004 and is similar to what Boone County just approved. Welcome to our program, Bruce Sawatsky.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Glad to have you in the conversation. We hope that you and our audience will also join the conversation as well. What do you think would most help children grow up into healthy adults? What can be done? Give us a call. Share your ideas. Our number is 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And let's start with this question. Why the focus on youth? And Tim, you might be the best person to start us off on that. What's going on that is prompting that kind of a shift?
There are a number of things that are happening throughout our community and really happening across the country. We've seen as unemployment has gone up, the recession has taken root in ways that we never expected it would over the last 3-4 years. That families are struggling, and that family struggle, especially for families that are in poverty and even more so families that are in generational poverty, makes it very difficult for children to succeed in life. There's a lot of stress. There are mental health issues. There are basic needs that are not being met, food, clothing, shelter, health care. And if we don't get a handle on that with the escalating number of people in poverty, I believe we're going to have a situation where we can't get ahead of turning back the clock on generational poverty.
Christine, you're kind of nodding there. Your thoughts on that?
Well, one thing you mentioned about just, you know, the new focus, and truly Proposition 1 was a 2 to 3 year process in the making. So we've been working on that end goal for about 2.5 years. We've been meeting, and we began meeting as agencies who provide services because we couldn't meet the needs. And we kept talking about how do we work together, how do we meet the needs, what are our waiting lists looking like. And there was a group of motivated folks that said we can't just sit around and complain, we've got to do something about it. And so that is what morphed into Proposition 1.
And one of the challenges you've faced, and a number of other providers of services to children, especially at risk, is the declining amount of funding that is available from the federal government, from the state government with a budget crunch. I mean, that's put a real pinch in a lot of the services in our community.
Yeah, mental health funding has been cut by a third each year, state funding. And, you know, federal funding, it's often federal funding comes in the way of grants or projects. And so a lot of agencies are hesitant because those are very time limited. And it's not a matter of if that money if you get it, it's not a matter of if it goes away, it's a matter of when. And Soul House, mm-hmm. a program funded by United Way and hopefully would be a recipient of mental health services through Putting Kids First, is a program of teens, that a teen shelter program, and they provide a lot of different services. But that was started on a federal grant, and they've been praying every year that it doesn't go away. Well, they found out this year that it's all but gone away.
Right. Candy, your thoughts on this in terms of the needs that are out there and what's going on with those that's prompting a lot of discussion around this?
Well, again, I would reiterate everything that's already been said, but I think what you have is, for lack of a better term, a perfect storm, in the sense that you have this increasing need in families and a decreasing resources. And it makes it very obvious what's going on. I think those of us who work with these families a lot, we know intuitively that the earlier we can start with this, the better off we are in the long run, right? But because the funding is so tight, we get a very short-term perspective, mm-hmm. That doesn't really allow us to look at those longer-term issues. So I think using the money smartly, what's limited, is a lot of what's driving this.
Okay, I want to remind everyone this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about funding for programs that help young people and what increases in that funding might accomplish. Joining me in the studio are Christine Corcoran, director of the Putting Kids First Coalition, Candy Iveson, board president of the Heart of Missouri Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and Tim Rich, executive director of the Heart of Missouri United Way. Joining us by phone is Bruce Sawatsky, executive director of the Community and Children's Resource Board of St. Charles County. For those of you in our audience, what do you think could be done to help more children grow into healthy adults? We'd love to hear your ideas. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. And we'd like to remind you that Intersection is broadcast live every Monday at 2 on KBIA and online at kbia.org. You can be part of our conversation at that time and watch our video stream by going to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. Bruce, I want to bring you into the conversation here. St. Charles has been funding a program like this for many years now, about, what, 8 years?
Since 2005.
Since 2005. So what have you seen happen over that amount of time?
We've seen a tremendous impact in our community. We've seen a drop in teenage pregnancy by about 9%. We've seen child abuse drop by about 24%. We've seen a number of teenage runaways drop by about 27%. Juvenile justice involvement dropped significantly, and our graduation rates have improved by about 3%.
And how did that happen? How did all those numbers move in that direction? What was going on?
Well, I think our board was very purposeful in where it wanted to invest its money and where it wanted to intervene. It had those items as goals from the very beginning in terms of what it wanted to impact. And so that's where we put our priorities. That's where we put our funding into those programs that we felt would have an impact in those at-risk populations.
And what are some of the programs that you think had the most impact?
I think some school-based programs have been very effective, some traditional counseling programs. We've added an additional crisis nursery into our community, which is preventing child abuse. So we've got a myriad of programs from prevention all the way up to the more intensive services that are now available to many more of our families.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tim, your thoughts on that in terms of how what's going on in St. Charles might apply here in Boone County and mid-Missouri?
Well, I think you're seeing this is a national problem. It is not just happening in our communities. It's happening all over. United Way Worldwide made a move about 12 years ago to begin to focus on what we call community impact. And their focus is on education, income, and health, income being financial stability of families. But those are the core building blocks of a solid family and of a solid community. And if you don't have those all together, you're not going to have stable families. When you listen to Bruce talk, you know, he's talking about impact. That's one of the things that we've looked at. You know, we've done the same good work with a number of agencies for 65 years in the greater Columbia, mid-Missouri area. But the reality is all the indicators continue to get worse. And, you know, I came here in 1984. We had a poverty rate in town of about 11-12%. Today it's 23% of all Colombians, one out of five, almost one out of four living in poverty. And often you can't see it. The impact on children is devastating. We're seeing that now with the fact that in Columbia Public Schools, 43% of all Columbia Public School children qualify for the federal free meal program. That's an indicator of poverty. That means they don't get enough food at home, and that's great. They're getting that food now at school, but what about the weekends? What about Christmas break? What about summer vacation? Somebody has to intervene, because if kids don't have food, they're not going to be able to concentrate and to study and achieve well in school. And we all know if kids don't achieve well in school and graduate from high school, they're almost doomed to a life of poverty.
Right. And I will tell you that Dr. Belcher was one of our biggest fans for Proposition 1, and he would tell you, as would the Hallsville and Ashland superintendents, that the number one issue they have in the schools, teachers would say, are mental health issues, dealing with kids with mental health issues. And one of the most wonderful things about Proposition 1 is that services can be provided to any child 19 and under that is a resident of Boone County and their family. So often you can secure counseling maybe for a child, but they're going home to live in a certain environment. So the great thing is that it can cover their families as well.
And that's part of the model that we're working on. We understand, and working very closely with the public schools as well, partners like you, Christine, and CASA, that have been involved with us, but we have to wrap around the entire family. We have learned, and there are case studies across the country, that if you want children to succeed, you want them to grow up stable and mentally healthy, you've got to wrap around the entire family that is struggling and provide the supports there to launch a new generation of young people. And as our volunteers dug into all the data that we were looking at, they realized education and starting with kids is where we have to begin if we want to make a long-term impact.
All right. Candy, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I just wanted to add a couple of points. One, I do think it's important to point out that kids have mental health issues at all income levels.
They do.
It is not just a poverty issue. So that's one thing.
And that's just our focus is
well,
on poverty.
Well, and right. Certainly children in that population are more likely.
Absolutely.
But this is a much broader, a broader community issue that goes beyond and
right.
and intersects with the poverty piece. The other thing I would add is that a lot of times when I talk to folks about things like this, we say, well, you know, that's where are the parents? Why aren't they dealing with this? The thing is, it may not be your child that has a mental health issue, but those kids that do have them affect every other child that's in the classroom. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, in the community or in the neighborhood. And so I think it behooves us to take that broader perspective about every kid in the community, whether it's your kid that has an issue or not.
You're absolutely right.
Because they do. You know, if you have a classroom with 30 children and you have four or five of them that have behavioral issues for some reason that are disruptive, you are affecting the education of all the other kids in that classroom.
And I can vouch for that. My wife is a parateacher in the Columbia Public Schools elementary, and working with some special needs kids, very difficult but very rewarding when they make some progress. And yet one child can really hijack an entire classroom and shut off the learning for everybody for up to 2 hours. If those needs are not met.
And are we seeing more kids that have these needs, or are we just getting more sophisticated about recognizing what they need?
I think that we did a needs assessment in 2000, 10 to say what is the need truly. Mm-hmm. And so the University of Missouri Truman School did that needs assessment and found that 3,000 kids and families, which is remarkable if you think about it, had asked for services and did not receive them. Mm-hmm. Those were kids that we could prove to you were on waiting lists. The astonishing thing to me about that is that I probably did 250 talks to educate people about what Proposition 1 would do, and I can't tell you how many people would email me afterwards or pull me aside and say, I never knew where to turn, or I knew my child was depressed, but I didn't recognize the symptoms. And we did a suicide town hall meeting and, had parents talk about not really understanding or knowing how bad it was. Mental illness and mental health issues, it's very isolating mm-hmm. for parents, and we don't have a good awareness. One of the things that they've been able to do in other counties, which I'm so excited about for us, is to increase the awareness about signs and recognizing those earlier so that early intervention can be done. They've done a tremendous amount of heroin town hall meetings, and people think, oh, that's not Columbia. We don't have that problem. Well, that is a growing problem that we have here, and we have no prevention going on in the schools right now for drug and alcohol use. I believe we're seeing the effects of that.
Right. Bruce Sawatsky, I want to throw to you on this this question of the needs and the amount of need out there. In St. Charles, once a lot more funding was available, did you find that the need went up because people knew that there was, services to be asked for?
What we found was that we had a lot of the services here in our community. The problem was we were turning away too many people. What this fund allowed us to do was to expand our programs and to meet those needs, and because a lot of those situations were getting would get a lot worse. I also want to comment on the prevention programming, because I think mm-hmm. that's a key part of what can be funded through this. And we fund sexual abuse prevention. We fund suicide prevention, bullying prevention, and substance abuse prevention in all of our public classrooms here in St. Charles County as a result of this fund, things that weren't being provided beforehand.
Right.
And that's teaching kids a lot of skills in terms of how to avoid temptation and what to do when they get confronted with difficult situations that oftentimes kids aren't prepared to handle.
And how does that work? Is that, someone comes into the classroom and teaches lessons on these things?
Right. We have our social service providers actually working quite well together in concert in terms of, certain agencies provide certain types of prevention program, and they go into the classrooms anywhere from the kindergarten level up through the high school level, depending on the program. And they're providing experiential types of presentations, but also just information to kids so that they know how to handle situations that are going to arise.
Right. And do those programs exist already in Boone County, or would those need to be created?
Some of those services exist. I think the prevention services, there are many agencies that have programming that would love to provide that, but as funding has shrunk or has gone away, or it's not been, that's the first thing to go with funding. So I think that that there are agencies ready and willing to provide those services. The other quick thing I wanted to add is that Boone County has a higher prescription drug abuse, alcohol use, and marijuana use rate among 6th through 12th graders than the state average. We also have a higher suicide ideation rate. So 1 in 10 kids in Boone County has considered suicide. Of those, about 9% of them had a plan. So that rate is going up, and I think there are a lot mm-hmm. of things that Tim mentioned earlier, and this combination of unmet needs and the growing pressures and all of that. But those rates are going up, and Boone County is not doing well with those rates. We also have a pretty high dropout rate.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, again, Columbia Public Schools would tell you that much of that is tied to not only poverty, but mental health issues. Mm-hmm. Kids with mental health issues are 6 times more likely to be suspended from school and to not attend school.
And if you...
Bruce, go ahead, and then we'll hear from Candy.
Yeah, I think, Christine, you would also find that, you know, a lot of those kids end up in residential care and then at a very expensive rate through the state. And, you know, we can treat these kids locally by surrounding them with enough services and the family with enough services and can treat them very successfully. And they can, you know, stay in school and stay out of the juvenile justice system and graduate.
Mm-hmm. Candy, your thoughts?
Yeah, and there is a long-term impact on this. And, Bruce, you touched on that because when you look at folks who are in the prison population, who are in the juvenile justice system, there's an overwhelming percentage of them that have a mental health issue that wasn't addressed. So, again, if you can catch it early and attend to it, you save. It may cost you something in the beginning, mm-hmm. but it saves you something in the long term.
Okay. Which our research shows that every dollar invested in these early intervention and prevention services saves you $8, documented $8 down the road.
Right. Let me remind everyone, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about funding for programs that help young people and what increased funding might accomplish. Joining me in the studio are Christine Corcoran, director of the Putting Kids First Coalition, Candy Iveson, board president of the Heart of Missouri Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and Tim Rich, executive director of the Heart of Missouri United Way. And joining us by phone, we also have Bruce Sawatsky, executive director of the Community and Children's Resource Board of St. Charles County. For those of you in our audience, from your observation, are there resources or other things that kids need that they're not getting? Share your ideas and your observations. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. Christine, you outlined some pretty negative statistics in terms of where Boone County stands on some of these issues among youth. Why is that the case? I mean, Columbia is a pretty affluent community generally. The recession has not really hit hard here. So some of these poverty issues mm-hmm. you'd think wouldn't necessarily connect here, and yet those numbers are telling.
They are telling, and I mean, I think there's a lot of, there are a lot of assumptions about, I think exactly you just hit on one, that we are an affluent community and that we're able to serve the kids that we have and families, and it's just simply our waiting list through the Truman School documented through that needs assessment, all of the people that have been turned away from services. I think a lot of times it's we don't do a good job, agencies, of telling the story about the need for services and telling it loudly and consistently. I can tell you, again, from doing all of those multiple presentations for Proposition 1, people were shocked. And I also found it interesting because of the mental health, the stigma around mm-hmm. that. You know, a lot of people think, well, what's wrong with that kid? The parents just need to step in and parent, or that kid just needs to pull himself up by the bootstraps and figure things out. And it's just much more complicated than that. It is much easier to see a hungry child and feed him mm-hmm. than it is to address his depression or an eating disorder or substance abuse.
One of the challenges we found in some of the research we did, and we also used the Truman School for some of our needs assessment. We also did a public opinion poll, a scientific poll, to find out what the public perceived. And one of the things that was striking to me is that 40% of Boone Countyans and 40% of people in Columbia say they don't know anybody in poverty. When you begin to dig into the numbers, especially among youth, the 43% of those kids who are eligible for free and reduced price lunch, when I talk to Chris Belcher, he says, but 80% of our African-American K-12 kids are living in poverty. And yet often they are invisible. His struggle is people blame the public school system for people being in poverty, and yet he's having a difficult time helping kids succeed because they live in poverty and have all of these needs. And you look at the age at which our children right here in mid-Missouri begin using cigarettes, age 11, begin drinking at age 12, begin using marijuana at age 13. Very often that is self-medication, just like we see in adults. And there is a stigma. That's one of the biggest challenges. If you have a child or even a family member who's not a child, doesn't matter what socioeconomic class you're in, there's a stigma about a mental health disorder or stress or depression or bipolar disease that impacts all of your life. And so it's very difficult sometimes to get people to seek treatment. You put on top of that that our unemployment rate in Boone County has increased by 70% since 2006. While it's not as dramatic as other parts of the community, that's a huge increase for us. And with that, unemployment takes away benefits. People don't have the resources they need to seek out and pay for care. As we see employers changing health benefits, wondering what's going to happen with the onset of Obamacare, there's a lot of need out there, and there's going to be gap as we move forward and claw our way back out of this economic problem.
And I'll add to that the mental health funding through health insurance and such. Insurance may pay for two sessions, mm-hmm. two or three sessions, but that kid really needs 10 sessions. And if you're working with a family who maybe both parents are working, but they're barely making ends meet, you know, what's going to be the first to go? It's paying for counseling. So it's farther reaching than just kids in poverty, because often kids in poverty have Medicaid, and you know, they can get services through Medicaid. It's sort of that middle ground folks who are, you know, making ends meet, they're working, but they can't fund the treatment that their kids need or the counseling that they need for their child.
Bruce, you were going to weigh in.
Yeah, I think Tim is on target there with, you know, what the economic impact has been on a lot of families there. But in addition to that, these kids are feeling all that anxiety that's going on with their parents related to the economic uncertainty. If mom or dad has lost a job, then, and you know, that's being discussed, or at home, I mean, these kids are feeling it, and it's impacting how they are at school, how they're feeling about themselves. You know, we're just seeing an increase in anxiety disorders and depression and suicidal thinking as a result of it.
Right. Is there going to be part of this funding dedicated to reducing some of those stigmas in addition to helping the kids who actually have the mental illnesses?
Yes. One of two things. One is I think the awareness that Proposition 1 has brought is already increasing and decreasing that stigma. But also, I know in other counties, and Bruce might speak to this, they've done mental health first aid training, and they have made that available for virtually anyone who wants to go through that. And the third thing that they have done, which I think we've already begun and we need to keep doing, are the town hall meetings for parents and for concerned community members around suicide, around drug and alcohol use, those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, maybe you could speak to that real quickly.
We've just started funding some mental health first aid in our county, although it's been more training in the St. Louis County area. But again, stigma is a big issue related to mental illness. It just there isn't anybody necessarily in the legislature who takes this on or champions this cause, and so it really is up to a lot of the social service providers to beginning to put information out there that this is not something that, you know, kids are necessarily to be blamed for, or parents are to be blamed for, that there are chemical imbalances, that there are, you know, biochemical reactions going on in the brain that are causing a number of these things, that kids aren't to blame, aren't at fault here. And we need to challenge a lot of the old thinking that has existed in our country for a long, long time.
Okay. I need to remind everyone that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about funding for programs that help young people and what increasing that funding might accomplish. Joining me in the studio are Christine Corcoran, director of the Putting Kids First Coalition, Candy Iveson, board president of Heart of Missouri Court-Appointed Special Advocates, and Tim Rich, executive director of the Heart of Missouri United Way. Joining us by phone, we also have Bruce Sawatsky, executive director of the Community and Children's Resource Board of St. Charles County. We're going to take a short break, but we hope that you will stick around and join our conversation after the break, so stay with us. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about funding for programs that help young people and what that funding might accomplish. Joining me in the studio are Christine Corcoran, director of the Putting Kids First Coalition, Candy Iveson, board president of Heart of Missouri CASAS, court-appointed special advocates, Tim Rich, the executive director of the Heart of Missouri United Way, and joining us by phone, Bruce Sawatsky, executive director of the Community and Children's Resource Board of St. Charles County. For those of you in our audience, are there things that you think could be done to help more kids in our community succeed? We'd love to hear your ideas. Give us a call, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. We've been talking a lot about the sort of word services for kids, and I wonder if we might step back a bit and talk about what are the things that are available for kids out there? What are some of these organizations doing in order to help kids who have needs? And some of it is poverty needs, some of it is mental health needs. But let's talk a little bit about what actually is being done here and what we might expect more of to be done. Tim, why don't we start with you in terms of some of the things that you're planning to fund?
Yeah, there are a number of things that have been going on for a number of years in this community. Very, very good services, great partners with us and others outside of the United Way network. One of the things we're focusing on is we really are hearing from our donors and our supporters and the general public, we've got to be able to quantify impact and results, return on investment. Can you tell us what changes in people's lives? It's not enough just to fund those programs. And so, you know, we're funding middle school mentoring programs starting in 2013, moms programs where we're teaching moms how to be parents. That's one of the exciting ones. When you start looking at the number of kids in poverty, 71% of them are in households headed by a single woman. And so you got single mothers with one or two or three or four children. Often the siblings are actually the caretakers of the kids after school, and so they don't get a chance to be children. That causes some challenges. If a mom is working and trying to provide all that she needs for her family, very often she doesn't have time to go out and seek those services. So partnering with the public schools, we've got Family Counseling Center is going to be doing some school-based programming with their mental health services that we'll be funding. Getting that connection and really all of us working together in collaboration, not just referral agreements, but really talking about how can we better serve the kids, find the kids, connect the kids to services, and then follow them to see that what we're doing is really making a difference that's measurable is important.
Mm-hmm. Christine, some of the things that you're hoping the new program in Boone County will help support?
Sure. Well, we're hopeful that additional respite services can be provided. Rainbow House is one of the respite providers.
And by that, you
mean
places for kids to stay?
Yes, kids to stay where their parents to have a break, or if they are in between jobs and need to move, or, you know, something like that. Short-term care that kids can get, outpatient substance abuse treatment programs, Phoenix programs, and Pathways, and there are a lot of great agencies that have programs, but the cost of those programs many people can't afford, and their waiting lists are long currently. There's a huge need for psychiatric services in Boone County. What we see is a lot of pediatricians who are giving kids medications that really should be being followed by a psychiatrist. So hopefully we will increase psychiatric services and counseling services. Hopefully temporary shelter. There were 60 teenagers that were living on the street. And I keep mentioning Columbia, but I want to make sure everyone is clear that this is a Boone County-wide program, even though the population in mass is in Columbia. But Dr. Belcher will tell you that...
Dr. Belcher, the superintendent of Columbia schools.
So my caveat was the Columbia. He will tell you there are 280 homeless kids that they're tracking through the Columbia Public Schools. So hopefully temporary shelter for those kids. There are a lot of great prevention programs out there that are very performance-based and outcome-driven. So they've been proven to work. So not something that we don't know if it works or not. That can be provided mainly through the schools that are hopefully going to be funded under this funding.
Mm-hmm. And Candy, let Candy weigh in here for a second, and then we're going to come back to you. Candy, your organization does a totally different type of thing in terms of helping kids as well, right?
Right, we do. What we have is focus on the kids that are already involved in the child welfare system in Boone and now in Callaway County. Mm-hmm. And we train volunteers. It's pretty extensive training to work with those children, which to my mind is... It's wonderful for the volunteers and the children, right? But it also helps people, I think, understand what's going on with some of these families because it's pretty incomprehensible. And we put people through 30 hours of training, and almost inevitably they come out and say, I had no idea. You know, so exposing the rest of the community to this kind of, you know, what these issues really are and how difficult they are to address, because I think, you know, not only we've talked about mental health issues being stigmatized, mm-hmm. we've talked about, you know, whole populations being invisible, right?
Yes, absolutely.
There's just a lot of misunderstanding out there about a lot of these issues, and I think substance abuse is one that's not only stigmatized, but, you know, there's this sense that, well, they just need to stop. Well, you know, and that's why the insurance company funds two sessions, right? So that you can just stop. But it's not that easy to stop an addiction, particularly when it's a self-medicating thing for some underlying problem that hasn't been addressed.
And when you add in, you know, the issues of culture and language, it's very difficult for folks, especially in poverty where we work. Folks don't have the language sometimes to describe the things that are going on or the words that they use. We in the serving industry and sometimes in middle class America assign different meanings to those words. And so you've got all kinds of barriers to understanding what the real problems are. And then you also have to build trust and relationship with the family in order to begin to change those conditions and work with the family. People in poverty are afraid to be exposed. They're afraid somebody's going to take their children away mm-hmm. if they go seek help. And so we've got to make it a much more positive, trusting relationship all the way around if we want to be able to help these children.
Okay, Bruce, your thoughts?
Yeah, just a couple of them several things that have been mentioned. One is that all of the funding boards over here on the eastern part of the state that have passed this Proposition 1 here have had a requirement that all of the partnering agencies have clinical outcomes that they have to hit and that they are working with the families on. And we've had over 90% of our outcomes being hit by our agencies when they work with the families. And I think that's what's contributed to the community impact, is that they're focusing in on each individual family and trying to make a difference with them. I think that's just critical. The other piece that I think is going to be critical here is that the board who's going to be making these funding decisions is coordinating in some sort of way with all these other efforts just to make sure that there isn't duplication of services. You could be funding the same type of services, but making sure that we're not duplicating would be very important.
Okay. A quick reminder that you can join our conversation in the audience as well. You can give us a call, 573-882-8925, if you have questions or ideas for helping youth in our community. You can also email us in. We did get an email from one of our audience members, Jeremy, asked a question related to what we're talking about. Do you see much help from the church community in all of this?
I think there needs to be more. That's one of the efforts that we've made is we understand you have to have the entire community at the table if you want to solve these problems. And I recognized when I came to United Way 3 years ago that the faith community seemed to be absent from our tables. They weren't in our allocations panels. They weren't on our board. They weren't in some of our town hall or discussion groups. And so we've made a concerted effort to reach out to them. They have resources and assets, and by and large are the greatest and largest provider of volunteers, really caring volunteers who want to be involved with these. And so I think we've got to continue that outreach and bring them to the table in more ways than we have before.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, what about in St. Charles?
Churches have been a real integral part of why we've been successful, because they're part of the wraparound team for many families. who are connected with their church. I mean, they get involved in the service delivery, the volunteers, when we have various drives that are out there in the community to help with basic needs of families and young people, the churches really step up.
Mm-hmm. Other thoughts on that? Or?
It's our experience as well at CASA. Mm-hmm.
We've seen here locally the Broadway Christian Church over the last couple of years has developed a special program for families who have a child with autism. And, you know, what an interesting way to go about their ministry, but also addressing the needs of the family and teaching their community about the needs of families who have an autistic child or an autistic member. That helps us get over the stigma. It helps us really become more connected. And I want to reiterate one of the things that Bruce said. One of the things we have to do, and we're moving towards this, and I think the entire community is, but we have to have shared metrics. We have to agree there are certain things that we're going to measure, and we're all going to measure them. So we know, is this program having more success than this one, and why? How can we make them all as successful as the ones that are really achieving the goals that we've set?
Well, let me ask you about that. What are the important metrics, and how do you connect those to individual programs?
I wish I could tell you all those. I mean, that's part of what we're looking at. And yeah. We, in our process, we've asked the 50 or so agencies that applied for funding with 109 strategies to help us hit our targets and asked them what could they measure right now. And so we've looked at those. We've built our first set of funding on those measurements with some feedback and hopefully some perfection. And then we will be convening them as we go over the next year to say, okay, what other things could we measure? Does United Way need to bring some of those systems into play and build the ability for agencies? Sometimes they just don't have the systems, the infrastructure, the ability or personnel to chart the things that really need to be measured to prove that we're making a difference. And so we may need to backfill some of that.
And I think that a lot of agencies, here's the thing, no one agency is funded by one source. So we play, we have to answer to a number of funders and maybe a number of funders for one program because no one funding source covers a full program. And I do think that agencies have great outcomes to share and to show. I think we don't, I'm not sure that we're great at getting the word out
right.
about that and saying to you, we decreased teen pregnancy by 10% or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. I don't think we do a good job of sharing those successes with the public in a way, in a simplified way. I can tell you we worked painfully every week with 30 people and we would say, you have to simplify this for us because you can't say to the general public, here are the 10 messages to get to this end point. You have to simplify that because it's just too great.
Well, how do you figure out which programs are actually responsible for the change in the numbers? I mean, so you could start tracking pregnancy rates or suicide thought rates or things like that. And how do you know which of the things you're doing are the ones that actually affect those?
I think that's part of the challenge of this is that for most of those kind of overarching measures like a graduation rate or a teen pregnancy rate, there's one program doesn't make the difference.
Right.
I mean,
in other words,
it's very difficult as the program director to create that causal relationship with what you did and what happened, right? Because there's usually 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 other factors that contribute. Mm-hmm. And so I do think it's a challenge for the individual agencies to make that claim. I think sometimes, Christine, you're correct, that we're too shy about putting out what we do. But I also think that overall, when you put all those facets together, that's where you see a result.
But you can. There are indicators that you can say, like we can do a depression inventory among moms, and if the depression and anxiety goes down, we can measure that and show you that. If babies are born with a healthy birth weight, that's a very tangible number. We can say, certainly to Candy's point, it wasn't all because of our intervention that we had a healthy baby, but it was a collaborative that wraparound.
Exactly.
piece that Tim's talking about, it was us working with the health clinics and working with the mom to stop smoking and, you know, all of those things. And so it's a, it is a wraparound piece, but there definitely are hard indicators that we can say as a group we have met. And that, in a way, is what makes it complicated, too, to say you're going to move the needle on poverty or increase or decrease the mental health issues. It's it's so much more difficult to measure than to feed someone. You know?
Bruce, I want to ask you about this. How have you approached that in St. Charles in terms of making decisions each year? So, you know, every year you've got more decisions to make about what you're going to fund, and you have the past as an indicator. How do you connect those two things in order to try to make sure you're on a successful path in terms of which things you're going to select?
Right. We're in a slightly different situation than Boone County is. I mean, you guys are just starting off right now. I mean, we're fairly established, and what we have available each year is, in terms of new programming, is less and less because we run a partnership model, and that is that we fund the same programs year in and year out, but we look at utilization rates of each of the programs, and if we need to reduce a program because the utilization isn't there, we do that, and then you know, make some of that money available for other types of programs. So we're in a slightly different situation. But my board, on a yearly basis, looks at needs assessments, looks at waiting list information, and prioritizes its available funding for any new dollars that we might have, and says we want to target these particular populations or these types of services. So, but you know, we're in a different developmental spot. You know, we're 8 years down the road from you guys. So.
Right. And what about the outcomes in terms of connecting some of those statistics on, you know, dropouts and pregnancies and things like that?
Yeah, I agree with the other panelists on this, and it's not something that we're at a point yet where we can, you know, definitively say this particular service has caused this specific community outcome. And it is very hard to measure. But, you know, we've expanded our ability to provide respite to about 600 families in our county since we started, and a large number of those were at risk of child abuse or hurting their children. And so we believe that that's had an impact on why our child abuse rate has gone down. Mm-hmm. You know, we know that we work with teen moms who are getting pregnant at 14 and 15, and they're not coming back at 16 and 17 for the second pregnancy. Mm-hmm. For those reasons, we feel like, you know, it makes sense that our services are having an impact. Can we say that definitively through scientific study? No, but, you know, I think we're close to that, and I think we're trying to find out some ways that we could look at seeing if we can't make that kind of connection.
Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the keys. This is the first time, really. I mean, we've done a lot of good work. Our agencies have. We work together. We have for years. I've been here 28 years, and it's just astounding the way that we really do work well together. But to come together with an intent that we want to measure things in common, we want to see how are the services we're providing complementing or augmenting what other services are there and wrapping around the whole family. I think if we agree as a community that we want to do this, we'll be able to see community-wide, like Bruce has talked about, some changes. We're working with the public schools and have what we think is a really good opportunity. We're not going to just fund 1 year anymore. We know in order to get to outcomes, you have to have 4 or 5 years to chart and see if anything has changed. And so we've extended our funding periods to 2, 3, 4, and 5 years worth of funding. We're working with the public schools because there are some indicators we can begin to look at with the groups that we're dealing with, especially kids at risk and in poverty, to see if kids participating in the programs we're funding are doing better or worse than other kids in the general population by sharing data with the public schools anonymously and confidentially through some systems that we've discovered. And so we're anxious to get that underway. It's going to take a couple of years to produce that, but if we can show that kids participating in our anti-smoking programs or our anti-teen pregnancy programs are not only not getting pregnant or not doing drugs, but they're also achieving better in school than others, or if the referral rates among those kids are going down, you know, for referrals to the office for disciplinary problems, behavioral outbursts, or truancy, I think we can have some pretty hard indicators that we will know it's a part of this entire collaborative effort is making a difference.
Well, you started to answer the next question I was going to ask, which is, okay, so what is going to be different? What are the things that are most important to try to move the needle on in Columbia and in Boone County in the outlying areas within the next 5 to 10 years? I mean, what are the priorities at this point for the organizations working in our area?
Certainly for us, reducing the dropout rate, especially among minorities. That's where we see the greatest dropout rate. We've seen the effects of that on our community earlier this year with shootings in the street of our own kids shooting each other and killing three of ours in this community. That is a symptom of a much larger problem. As we dig into that, we will look at that, and we'll have to find some other ways, but there are lots of opportunities here.
Mm-hmm. Christine, I'm curious your thoughts on that in terms of the priorities.
I agree. I think if preventing teen pregnancy, but if a teen does become pregnant, we see that teens can manage with one child, but two, forget it. So preventing repeat pregnancies is huge. Making sure that babies are born healthy, you know, working with moms to ensure that they're getting prenatal care, those kinds of things. I mean, those are some very tangible. Babies being born healthy cost taxpayers less money. They have a healthier start in life. I would say getting the people who have wanted services that we've identified as needing and wanting mental health services, getting them those services is the first priority, at least for Proposition 1. Looking at the capacity that agencies have to provide those services, those good quality services, and getting the word out there about that and getting people in for services, and then focusing on prevention, some prevention programs within the schools, I think is huge.
Mm-hmm. Candy, your thoughts?
Well, I do think it's worth noting, that, as Bruce did, that they have 8 years down the road on this, and we're just starting. And so there is a whole process that's specified in the statute about how this goes going forward. And at this point, it's mostly in the hands of the county commission to establish the governing board for this funding. Okay, so that governing board, once it's established, will have to decide how it's going to proceed.
Right.
You know, is it going to do a new needs analysis? Is it going to stick with the one we have? And that board, in fact, will set the priorities for that putting kids first money. Mm-hmm. So I just need to say that because we're not, you know, I wish that we could say right now today, here's the priorities that that board has established, but it hasn't been convened yet. And so
And there are lots of competing priorities as we look in the data. One of the things that I like that Bruce said is they're looking at, you know, how do we then coordinate? You know, here United Way has $3 million plus that we're allocating in 2013. It's going to take a year for the Putting Kids First money to actually start to flow. But we ought to be looking at how does our money complement? Is there going to be money here that could replace the money we've put into some of these services so that we can expand into the places where there are gaps? In the past, you know, we've funded the same 31 agencies year in and year out, and we really want to be nimble and responsive to the change in needs. And I think we have to have more of those conversations and coordinate together. Not that the county is going to dictate what United Way does, but we ought to be sharing information at the same table and as a community, again, setting the targets and saying, okay, where can we best use our dollars to make this continuum happen that will give us real results for the majority of the families we're trying to serve.
Right. I should remind our audience one more time, this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about funding for programs that help young people and what increases in that funding might be able to accomplish. Joining me in the studio are Christine Corcoran, director of the Putting Kids First Coalition, Candy Iveson, board president of Heart of Missouri CASA, court-appointed special advocates, and Tim Rich, executive director of the Heart of Missouri United Way. On the phone, we have Bruce Sawatsky, executive director of the Community and Children's Resource Board in St. Charles County. For those of you in our audience, we have just a couple of minutes left. If you have any questions for our panelists or ideas to add to the conversation, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number, 573-882-8925. You can also send us an email at intersection@kbia.org. In terms of the way that this is going to implement, so it's going to take some time for that board to get set up. How long might we expect that to take?
Well, we we met with the county commission this summer, and we gave them a timeline, what we think is probably pretty aggressive. It is in their hands. We will be meeting with them soon to hopefully start talking about the board, getting the board in place. There are some other things that have to be in place as well. But the bottom line is the money starts getting collected April 1st. And the timeline that we proposed to the county commission based on the other experiences from the other counties is that it will take, as Tim mentioned, about a year to have those services out the door from passing. So hopefully next year at this time, we will be able to say these are the services that will begin being funded.
Right. And the United Way shift is taking place at the beginning of the year, right?
Yes. We've gone through our allocations process, our application process this fall, much later than I anticipated, and it did impact our campaign some, but it will start January 1. And I've had a number of agencies as well as donors and others in the community say, well, will this new Putting Kids First fund change where United Way funds? And the answer is, I don't know. I don't think so for the first year. We've committed to this year's worth of funding. Our board has really been focused on this. They're committed to it. And they have said, we will find a way to fund what we've promised in the past. If we didn't make goal, our standard policy was we just cut everybody a percent. Well, our board has said these things are important. We've committed to funding them. We will find a way to fund them. Our hope is that the community will rise and support us and we'll be able to make our campaign goal this year. It's still going, so if people want to give, they can. But the reality is it's urgent and it needs to be funded. All of these things do. And so we want to work together in partnership with the county, with the city and the social services funding that they provide, with Putting Kids First and any opportunity we can with others who put money in and then help coordinate these services for our community.
And what about the schools? I mean, the schools seem to be a central locus of young people. What's going on there? Are the schools a partner in all of this? Are they responsible for all this? Are they helping implement some of this?
They're absolutely a partner.
What's their role here?
Yeah, I would say that. Absolutely a partner in this. Mm-hmm. And I think that some of the next steps will be having conversations with real conversations with those superintendents and principals about the services that they would want in their schools in terms of prevention and early intervention, such as a counselor, a true clinician, or prevention services. Mm-hmm. And those are conversations that I think they are very excited about. Mm-hmm. About the possibilities. So,
and they've provided some resources now with our move to really want to measure the outcomes, and we've found this online platform that will help us do that and share information between our agencies and the public school data. They've also stepped up and are cost sharing a data analyst and researcher with us who will not only chart that data but will help us design assessments that all of our agencies and even non-agencies can use. My board has said we need to be supporting the entire continuum, and so whether or not people are member agencies of United Way, we want to be working with them to solve these critical issues throughout our community. And the schools have stepped up and actually put some skin in the game in that as well. I'm very proud of them for that.
Mm-hmm. And for us out here in St. Charles County, the superintendents are the gatekeepers, that if they want the program in their school, then they're sending support letters and efforts with the applications from the agencies. So if they don't feel like it's something that they can incorporate, then it doesn't get funded through us. So they're a very important partner to the whole process.
Okay. That's all the time that we have for today's program. I'd like to thank our guests, Christine Corcoran, Director of the Putting Kids First Coalition, Candy Iveson, Board President of Heart of Missouri CASA, Court-Appointed Special Advocates, Tim Rich, Executive Director of the Heart of Missouri United Way, and Bruce Sawatsky, Executive Director of the Community and Children's Resource Board of St. Charles County. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this as a rebroadcast that Intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday. You can join us each Monday afternoon by listening to KBIA or or by going online to kbia.org and following the link for Intersection. There you'll be able to watch a video feed of our program, submit your questions and comments, and to participate in an online chat with others in the audience. You'll also find a video archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Today's program was produced by Raymond Tungekar and Lee Jun Chung. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance today from Amy Simons. Pat Akers is our audio producer. I'm Reuben Stern. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week.